This hour, we'll be hearing excerpts from the Intelligence Squared U.S. debate that took place at Asia Society in New York City on the evening of January 15, 2008. This series of debates is sponsored by the Rosencrantz Foundation, and the proposition this time is, we should accept performance-enhancing drugs in competitive sports. The audience was polled before and after the event. We'll have the final results later in the program. But the entry poll recorded the audience as only 18% in favor of the motion, 63% were against, and 19% were undecided. To set the tone of the event, here's the Rosencrantz Foundation's chairman, Robert Rosencrantz.
When we scheduled this event some 5 months ago, we had no idea it would be so timely. Just in the past month, the Mitchell Report was released, naming some 88 Major League Baseball players alleged to have used steroids and other drugs. Roger Clemens' denials have been heard in 60 Minutes and were front page news in Sunday's New York Times. Record-breaking sprinter Marion Jones was sentenced to 6 months in prison for lying to a federal grand jury about steroid use. Congressional hearings on steroid use and the Mitchell Report actually started today in Washington. Closer to home, just a few days ago, Ben Johnson dropped out as our panelist on his counsel's insistence because of Johnson's involvement in a related legal case that was just noticed for trial.
The moderator for the night was veteran NBC sports commentator Bob Costas. We'll hear from him later, but now we'll sample a few of the ideas presented in the opening statements. The first speaker of the night was Norman Faust. He's a professor of pediatrics and director of the bioethics program at the University of Wisconsin. He's speaking for the motion.
Everyone in this room uses performance-enhancing technology and drugs. We use cars and computers to make our work more efficient. We use caffeine, alcohol, and Viagra to improve our performance. And every athlete in recorded history has used performance-enhancing drugs. Babylonians and Romans used herbs to improve their performance in battle. Naked Greeks put on shoes to run faster. And runners everywhere carbo-loaded before races to enhance their performance. Why, then, do we have a replay of the Salem witch trials to discredit, humiliate, and incarcerate elite athletes for doing what has been a standard practice for millennia? And why, out of the 1,001 ways in which athletes enhance their performance, have steroids and growth hormone been selected for particular vilification? We contend that the reasons given are morally incoherent, reek of hypocrisy, and are based on ice-cold wrong information. Critics say that they confer an unfair advantage, but advantages are only unfair if they're unequally distributed. The usual solution is to expand access. When Bob Segrin showed up at the 72 Olympics with a fiberglass pole, it was not banned, but there was a time to allow others to practice with it, and it was incorporated. The unfair advantage claim is further undermined by rampant hypocrisy. In the 88 Olympics, when Ben Johnson lost his gold medal because of steroid use, on the same day and the same press tent, Janet Evans, the American swimmer who had won the 5K swim, bragged about the greasy swimsuit that we had kept secret from the East Germans. Johnson used a drug that was available to everyone, although illegal, virtually on the training room tables. Evans used a secret technology available to none of her competitors and bragged about it. The press cheered American ingenuity and made Johnson a pariah. Critics say these drugs are harmful, but they rely on information that's wildly exaggerated or just fabricated. We are told repeatedly that these drugs use heart disease, cancer, and stroke. Well, human growth hormone has been given to almost 1 million children for 50 years, and there's still no real serious side effects that have been discovered. Oral testosterone did cause liver cancer, but for 20 years, athletes have been using injectables, which have never been associated with cancer. Critics claim that steroids undermine the integrity of records. This is naive. The records are not comparable with or without steroids or growth hormone. By one estimate, Babe Ruth playing in today's ballparks would hit 1,000 home runs, not the mere 750 that Hank Aaron and Bonds have hit. The only valid comparison is with peers playing in the same arenas with the same equipment against the same opponents, and Ruth hit more home runs in one season than any other team. He is in a league of his own, and no one has come close.
Finally, next, speaking against the motion, we'll hear from Richard Pound, a one-time Olympic swimmer for Canada and former chairman of the World Anti-Doping Agency.
In the 1950s and 1960s, before there were rules, veterinary products were used to beef up the human cattle. Shot putters went from throwing from 60 feet to 70 feet. It's true, they had terminal acne, testicles the size of jelly beans, a sperm count of zero, and were in a perpetual rage. But boy, they could sure toss the shot a lot further. Remember that athletes don't take these drugs to level the playing field. They do it to get an advantage. And if everyone else is doing what they're doing, then instead of taking 10 grams or 10 cc's of whatever it is, they'll take 20 or 30 or 40. And a vicious circle simply gets bigger. The end game will be an activity that's increasingly violent, extreme, and meaningless, practiced by a class of chemical and/or genetic mutant gladiators. I don't want my kids.
Also speaking against the motion, here's George Michael, creator and host of The Sports Machine.
Dr. James Andrews, a man I consider to be one of the foremost, absolutely best surgeons of all. Now, check this out. He said that in 2002, 17% of total baseball payroll went to guys who were on the injured list with muscle tears, muscle strains, ruptured Achilles tendon, and on goes the list. He said that we have had a 200% increase in just the 5 years prior to 2002. Baseball owners paid $370 million to players who were not able to play. Most of them, according to Dr. Andrews, were related to their use of anabolic steroids. And you now want to legalize it and govern it? No definitive clinical proof, though, that it was the result of steroids. No proof. I'm probably the only guy in the room who is friends with professional wrestlers. I started in 1980 with Bob Backlund. I've emceed a lot of their events. I've enjoyed them. I love them. Guys that are just names to you like Hulk Hogan, Ricky Steamboat, Nature Boy, Ric Flair, these are all friends of mine. I wanted to call and check with some of the wrestlers I used to know how they're doing today. How did they recover after the use of steroids? I went to call them, and you know what I found? Of the wrestlers who were professional stars, 40 were dead by the age of 40. 70 were dead by the age of 50. But there's no clinical proof that they died of steroid abuse, even though they all used steroids. Lyle Alzado, I knew him, I interviewed him, I liked him. Thought he was crazy, but that's why we got along. This is what's not commonly discussed. When he was a freshman in college, weighed 190 pounds. When he graduated as a senior and he started steroids in 1969 as a freshman, when he graduated, it was 300-pound muscle mass. That's a gain of 110 pounds, and you knew he was going big in the NFL draft. Went on to become the NFL Defensive Player of the Year in 1977. A couple of weeks before he died, he said, "Damn, if I'd never done steroids and human growth hormone, I wouldn't be dying today." He died at the age of 43. 43 years old.
Now we'll hear questions that moderator Bob Costas posed to the debaters. In this section, we'll hear for the first time from Julian Savulescu. He's professor of practical ethics at the University of Oxford. You'll hear reference to HGH, which is human growth hormone.
Dr. Faust, if there were unfettered access to performance-enhancing drugs, isn't it reasonable to posit that even now, or even during the so-called steroid era, there were some constraints, some fear of being caught. There were some tests, however flawed. But if it's all wide open, it would go beyond any levels we've seen heretofore and could possibly get into an area where not only would the competition be grotesque, but where there would be real and verifiable health risks.
Nobody knows, but my guess is it would be exactly the opposite.
Why?
Because if athletes could go to doctors and get drugs without having to go to Mexico or to Balco Labs, they could, A, get drugs which had been studied and tested and approved by the FDA. They'd know what they were taking. They could get drugs that would be manufactured in an American manufacturing facility with oversight by the FDA. And they'd be getting advice from doctors on which drugs were safe and effective, which now they can't find out even if they want to because the stuff comes from Mexico.
All right, suppose that there were regulated, permissible regulated use of performance-enhancing drugs, and in each case it was appropriate to the spirit of the particular sport. That's fine in the ideal, but it's naive to believe that each competitor, many of them obsessed with victory and believing in the full bloom of youth that they're invulnerable, would stay within those limits. Once there were unfettered access, they could just take as much as they wanted to gain whatever short-term competitive advantage they wanted, couldn't they?
or whatever a doctor would prescribe to them, and probably some would go outside the system. Well,
couldn't they get more than what the doctor prescribed? People do that all the time now with HGH. There's a certain amount you can prescribe plausibly for certain conditions, even for anti-aging purposes, and people just double it, triple it, quadruple it to whatever level they want, right?
Yeah, that's what they're doing now. The difference is that you'd have drugs which could be tested. You could have follow-up studies so they would know what the facts are. You'd know whether any of these deaths that George Michael refers to have anything to do with steroids. As he said, there's no evidence that they do. But there are other adverse effects of steroids that I would worry about, but we'll never find out about them because we can't study them. So I think athletes might be more constrained from using them if there was more data out there that they could know about.
Julian.
So what will happen if you allow access to safe performance enhancers is the honest athletes will come up. But of course the cheaters will still take, as you suggest, an advantage in the black market. But what you will be doing is narrowing the advantage that the cheater has, because now there's a market for safe performance enhancement. So you've made the honest athletes better off by bringing them closer to the cheaters without compromising their health. That's the reason why you want to create a market for safe performance enhancers. So growth hormone, we heard all this discussion about steroids. Growth hormone is a very safe substance. Now, you may be able to achieve a lot of the benefits that you can achieve with steroids by using growth hormone, and you'll be developing new substances that will be competitors for, at the moment, the stuff that is simply on the black market.
George.
Julian, would you hear what you just said? If I don't want to do drugs, I can't play against you.
If you don't want to take the risks of a spinal cord injury, you can't play professional football.
No, come on, drugs.
No.
Norman Foss.
If for 3 years in the NFL, there's a 90% chance of permanent disability. If you want to play in the NFL, that's what you buy into. People make that choice. Do you want to ban professional football because
the
injury rates?
No, but you play within the rules, and if you get hurt, that's an unfortunate accident.
But the reason you want these rules is because you're concerned about the health and safety of the athletes. Why aren't you against football?
A question that can be posed later in the debate when the format actually calls for direct questions from either side of the table. Here, one more question to this side, and then we'll...
These are excerpts from a live Intelligence Squared debate. In this next section, we'll hear for the first time from Dale Murphy, a former Atlanta Brave who started the I Won't Cheat Foundation. He's against the motion. Here, Bob Costas refers to WADA, which is the World Anti-Doping Agency.
Dale and George can respond as well. Dick, after all your years with the Olympics and with WADA, are you troubled by the fact that despite best efforts, the penalties are almost by definition disproportionate? You catch a handful, and we can reasonably assume that a larger group goes free. Marion Jones was never caught by Olympic testing, sophisticated as it was. She was caught by the legal system. And the same year that Ben Johnson was caught, others had statistical anomalies in their performances, and for whatever reasons, they were not caught. Does that trouble you?
Of course it does. Anytime you see somebody who's cheated and gets away with it, that's very troubling. It's one of the reasons why in WADA we devote, I think it's about 25% of our entire budget to scientific research. So we can find EPO now. We can find HGH. We can find evidence of blood transfusions, and we're developing a test that is not a muscle biopsy for genetic manipulation. We're getting a screening test that I think will be able to detect this stuff very unobtrusively by the time it comes on. So, yes, it bothers us, but you don't go in the direction Julian's suggesting, which is you pick the lowest common denominator theory. Help the guys who want to play honestly catch up with the cheaters, instead of bringing the cheaters back down to where what they promised to do, which was not to use these things. I think it's a complete reversal of responsibility and approach.
Dale, anything to add?
Yeah, if I didn't think we were making progress and that this is a winnable battle, however long it takes, then I would understand giving in. But I can't comprehend just giving up. Those who are against smoking in public have stayed with it, and it has worked. And we can change culture. We can change the way people feel about things. And this is a battle worth fighting instead of just giving in.
Here's a reason to think this battle is unwinnable.
Julian Savulescu.
Given the massive prize money and the incentives to cheat and the low probability of being detected, you can win the battle if you reduce the prize money, but that's not going to happen. Or you can unrealistically increase the detection rates, but you're not going to achieve that either. The economic models all push this into a prisoner's dilemma where people irresistibly will cheat given the incentives that are on offer and the probability of detection.
How many rich canoeists do you know?
Sorry?
How many rich canoeists do you know?
How many rich canoeists do you know?
It's not just money. I agree that it's part
there's of that. a whole array of Olympic sports, obviously, that have little or no financial reward attached to them.
Now we'll hear a section of the debate where the debaters question their opponents. The remaining speaker to be introduced is Radley Balco. He's a senior editor for Reason magazine, and he is for the motion. Here's Dr. Faust.
I'm going to try to squeeze in two questions if I can. I want to ask Dale Murphy a question. Andy Pettit, the Yankee pitcher who recently was named in the Mitchell report, and he admitted to using growth hormone. And he said, the reason I used it was because I had injuries, and my doctor said my injuries could heal faster, which is true. That's the way these things work. They let you to repair injuries faster so you can train harder and get back on the field. If Roger Clemens said that, if Ben Johnson said that, if they all said that, which they equally could have said, are you okay with what Pettit said, and would you be okay with them?
Dale?
Yeah, absolutely not. It's still trying to get an advantage over the guys that are not taking human growth hormone to recover from an injury. That's why guys take steroids. It's not necessarily to look like Barry Bonds, but it's to recover quicker. Pitchers, that's why pitchers take them. So I think in answer to your question, it would not be as big a story. Andy Pettit was smart. But is it still right? No. It's still not within the rules and the spirit of the game. I think he had a good PR agent and lawyer to say, this is how you get it off your back. It doesn't make it right.
But we're talking about what the rules should be.
Radley Balco.
I'm interested, as a foreign player, of your opinion, if it's true that the side effects of HGH are minimal, particularly when compared to steroids, and it does help. I mean, these are people, athletes are people whose livelihood depends on basically what amounts to physical labor, right? And if a guy can get back into the game quicker because of HGH, is that any different than a construction worker who wants to get back on the job quicker because his paycheck is dependent on it, taking something, a drug that has minimal effects that helps him recover quicker?
Reasonable question. Let me focus it a little bit. Are we in a pass-fail mindset about the whole array of performance-enhancing drugs? And should even those who are generally against the use of performance-enhancing drugs in competitive sports, should they consider that possibly we've lumped all these drugs and all the circumstances under which they might be used into the same grouping, and we might be able to take a more nuanced approach, and that maybe using HGH short-term to help rehab an injury is not the same thing as going steroids full-blown and going from a 160-pound whippet who hits 20 home runs to some sort of gargantuan figure who hits 73.
Are you referring to Barry Bonds?
It's just a number.
I retired at 37. Barry Bonds hit 73 home runs at 37.
Dale Murphy.
What's the future hold? I mean, does it help you heal quicker? Yeah, that's why guys take them. But do we need them? No. You're going to heal a little slower. I mean, let's stop the abuse of a controlled substance. Human growth hormone for kids helps them grow when they're not producing enough of their own. That's a legitimate use for it. I want to stop the abuse, and I think to allow any of it in, for whatever reason, increases the odds of abuse and increases, again, the kids seeing the example that they have to take this stuff to succeed. It just isn't needed. It's not needed.
In the interest of time, Norm, quickly, your second question.
Well, just first, as a doctor, I don't understand what medicine's about if it's not about trying to help people recover from injuries and heal. And if
but you not have a to hit home runs.
And if you have a drug that doesn't has almost no side effects and it helps people heal, I don't know how it differs from anything else that people
your question. Support.
Second one, Dick Pound, a lot of the discussion here has been about fair competition. Knowing that Janet Evans used a greasy swimsuit that was not available to her opponents, did you speak out at the time against that? Would you speak out against it now? Do you think her medal should be taken back? And if not, why not?
Dick? I think you've got a completely bizarre perception of the difference between Ben Johnson and Janet Evans. I mean, Ben Johnson used a prohibited anabolic steroid. There was a rule against it. There was no rule about whether you could have nylon swimsuits or greasy swimsuits.
I think it was fair.
I don't think that's the question here. What if she practiced harder? I mean, I greatly admire Janet Evans. I think she won the Olympics because she trained harder and was a better swimmer than it. I don't think the swimsuit made any difference, and there's been subsequent tests on all of these suits. And the International Swimming Federation said, wear whatever you want. It does not appreciably, if at all, affect performance. So I think you got your priorities really mixed up on that question.
Dick, you're right back at the microphone because it's your turn in the running order here to pose a question to the other side.
Well, I was struck by something that both Radley and Norman said, talking about having access to all of this and coercive rules. I mean, the coercive rules you're talking about, you make it sound like it's three guys at the IOC headquarters making up all these rules. The anti-doping rules are approved by 200-plus countries, 200-plus National Olympic Committees, 75 or more international federations. It's a consensus about what is right for sport. And, you know, maybe the question to you is, how come all you guys with these fabulous ideas aren't able to persuade 200 governments and 200 national...
To whom specifically are you directing
well,
the question?
I'll address it to both, because the other is... not all of the athletes you're talking about will have access to a Yale medical doctor. What about the athletes in Mexico, in Bulgaria? I mean, you want equal playing fields. You're not talking the same.
Well, what about the athletes who have the funds to travel to Colorado Springs to train in high altitude versus low-income athletes who might not? You know, there are built-in advantages and disadvantages. I think actually making a relatively cheap drug that mimics that effect, like EPO, which is much, much cheaper than, you know, flying an athlete out to Colorado to train at high altitude, actually democratizes that effect. And I don't think it actually makes it more difficult to achieve parity.
Norm, you wanted to have a quick response.
I just wanted, Dick keeps reminding us that these athletes broke the rules as if we're not all agreed about that. I didn't know the debate topic was, should athletes be allowed to break the rules? No is the answer. Okay, that's the end of that debate. The question is, why are the rules are there? Why do we have a rule that prohibits a doctor from prescribing a drug that helps you heal that has no side effects? Where did that come from? I haven't heard an answer to that yet.
I'll tell you what, I had an experience with medical ethicists a few years ago.
And Dick Pound.
I posed a question after the panel. I said, listen, let's say I'm a track and field athlete. Call me Ben, just not a real name. And I come to you and I say, listen, I would like to win the Olympics in Seoul. I can't do this unless I use anabolic steroids. There's nothing therapeutic about this. And I have to tell you that it's totally contrary to the rules of the sport under which I compete. Would you prescribe the anabolic steroids? And the entire panel of medical ethicists said, of course. And I said, what? And they said, yeah. I said, on what basis? They said, the autonomy of the patient. Sounds like Radley.
So I didn't hear
the autonomy of the patient.
Yeah, no, I don't think, for the fifth time, I don't think we should break rules, and I don't think doctors or ethicists should encourage people to break rules. But if an athlete came, well, I've said it, if Ben Johnson, if somebody named Ben, came to me and said, I've got an injury, do you know anything that'll help it heal, and it's riskless, and there's no rule against it, I'd say I can't think of any reason not to prescribe.
And what if the person came to you and they didn't want to make up a story, as they might have to, and they said, I have no injury, and I train like a demon, but I'd like to have benefits on top of that. Would you prescribe the steroids for them?
Well, first of all, I'm not in sports medicine for a reason, so I'm not into prescribing it. But that athlete would misunderstand it if he thought the reason that stops athletes from working out, the thing that why you can't lift weights 8 hours a day or 5 days a week is because you're suffering recurrent injury. They may not understand that. All they know is that they're sore and they can't work out, and that limits their ability to improve their performance.
So you believe the sole benefit of steroid use, we're not talking about HGH, we're talking about gross steroid use, is simply the ability to work out harder and recover from injury, that in and of themselves, they do not, on top of that, enhance performance and allow you to do something which you could not do if for some reason you could work out that hard without steroids.
Bob, if you and I started taking steroids now, we're not going to look like Dale Murphy anytime
soon
or Barry Bonds.
You can't win the Indy 500 in a Honda either. But if you have two Indy cars and one gets auto fuel and the other gets rocket fuel, you might have a different outcome.
As best we know, the main way they work is by enabling you to work out harder. Steroids without working out are not going to really change anything very much. They do increase your aggressiveness, which also helps you to work out harder, so they have a psychological effect. But I think it's all tied to working out.
Right. Against the rules, I briefly became part of the debate. I'll slap myself on the hand and turn it over to Radley to ask a question of the other side.
Sure. My question is directed at George. Let's say for the sake of argument that the names that you mentioned during your presentation did die directly as a result of their using steroids. During alcohol prohibition, people drank alcohol that was wood alcohol. They drank alcohol that was gin that was distilled in bathtubs. Toxic, nasty, nasty stuff. The reason they drank is because safer, cheaper, better alternatives weren't available at the time. Once prohibition ended, you know, nobody drinks bathtub gin anymore. Assuming that all these deaths were tied to steroids, all these deaths occurred during a period where steroids were illegal and were still prohibited. Why not lift that veil, let people who are going to do it anyway get steroids from a doctor, get steroids from more reputable distributors so they don't have to go to Tijuana. And maybe it wasn't steroids themselves that killed them. Maybe it was the fact that it was some black market steroids that they weren't being advised by a reputable doctor.
You're absolutely correct. Maybe, you know, if they were controlled better, maybe Lyle Alzado wouldn't have died. Maybe Ken Caminiti, who got most of his from Tijuana, wouldn't have died. But what about the tight end that I talked to a couple of weeks ago who admitted that he gained 60 pounds? This guy's only 38 years old. Gained 60 pounds, beat up his wife. Went to his coach and said, "Coach, help me. I'm doing the juice, but God, I beat up so-and-so. I know these people." He didn't get his in Mexico. But if Bob can do steroids, if we're playing side-by-side, he hits 230, I hit 230, we both want to move up to the next level. If he's allowed to do juice, when I think back to sitting on a bench at St. Louis, I'd have done juice. So whether it's legal or illegal is immaterial. If we make it legal, the problem's going to only become worse.
I guess my point is, if we're talking about the safety of the athletes, isn't it better to have this all happening above ground and in the open air?
No, it's better to have it. If you use it, you're out of baseball. It should be a very strong penalty. Pete Rose, they know that if you gamble, you're dead. So that's the way it should be with steroids, unless doctor says, you know what, I'm going to go to the commissioner and say, Dale needs to have this so he'll be able to come back. Then I accept that.
Dale, your question.
You're listening to an Intelligence Squared U.S. debate on the motion, we should accept performance-enhancing drugs in competitive sports. Here's Dale Murphy, who is against the motion, asking a question of Dr. Norman Faust.
I cannot understand, and wouldn't you agree that the example that the young people see, wouldn't you say that abuse of these kind of drugs is particularly, we talk about side effects, but wouldn't you agree that it's particularly harmful to young people, that we may not even know abuse of these kind of drugs, you know,
again,
what may happen. Let me
slightly redirect it. Would you agree, Dr. Faust, with superior medical knowledge, would you agree that there are risks for adolescents that are not present, at least to the same degree, and you might argue at all, for adults?
Absolutely. And I said in my remarks that I thought they should be banned in children. There should be testing in children. There ought to be harsh penalties for suppliers.
If that's the case, then, isn't it inevitable, if you were to allow unfettered access to performance-enhancing drugs beyond a certain threshold of competition and a certain age limit, that those who aspire to play at the collegiate level and ultimately to play at the professional level wouldn't just be influenced, they'd be nearly compelled to begin using sooner than you would advocate?
No.
To get there.
I don't think so. First of all, they wouldn't be able to get them through prescribed channels. They wouldn't be able to get them through illegal channels.
Plenty of people get them now.
And that's why we need for rigorous testing and criminal penalties for those who do it. But listen, alcohol kills 50,000 people a year, and what are the big leagues doing about that? When players drink, I don't hear anybody talking about lifetime bans for drunk driving by baseball players. That kills 50,000 people a year. Mm-hmm. Including innocent victims, and including a lot of kids. And here we are talking about something that kills almost nobody. Chewing tobacco is a big problem among youth in this country, and we have the networks showing Terry Francona drooling every 10 seconds during the World Series.
Although they have banned it in the minors, and they would ban it at the major league level if they could unilaterally impose it.
And most seriously of all is the violence by professional athletes. I'm talking about sexual assault and criminal violence rampant in professional sports. No lifetime penalties, no ban, do a little community service and come back. What message does that send to kids?
Isn't that why, to the side of the table that is against the motion, isn't that why the argument against the use of performance-enhancing drugs is best focused on competitive issues, the sanctity of the records, the level playing field argument, and if we start moralizing about health dangers or relative impact on society, then you run up against all the arguments that Dr. Foss just laid out, and isn't the best argument for this side of the table the argument about competitive balance or competitive fairness?
True. But, Doctor, remember what Dr. James Andrews said. That is, we have more torn muscles, we have more pulled muscles, because we have too much muscle mass for the body. And that's the direct result of steroids and the workouts with steroids.
Very briefly.
That's the best man.
All right. I find, one of the things here, a lot of these things are like the guy who's pulled over on the highway by the policeman saying, but officer, why are you stopping me? There are all kinds of people going faster than I was. But to deal with the young people, I mean, you're familiar with the state-imposed doping programs in East Germany and some of those things, and the medical data arising from that. Right. Clearly there are health impacts, adverse health impacts on the athletes.
Those were horrible, and that was close to coercion. And as I said, the side effects in kids are sufficient to have very rigorous penalties against those who do that sort of thing.
Julian, your question.
We're listening to excerpts of a debate on the proposition we should accept performance-enhancing drugs in competitive sports. The moderator is Bob Costas, and here's the first question from the audience.
I'd welcome comment from any and all panelists as to the legitimacy, if any, of our Congress imposing its will on this issue and holding these hearings. What is its technical legitimacy in doing that? And philosophically, do you think it's any of their business?
All right, we'll let one person from each side respond to that. Bradley?
You can probably guess my answer. Just a very, very quick anecdote. When the baseball first objected to the Congress's jurisdiction to look into this matter, Congressman Davis and Congressman Waxman sent a letter back to baseball stating that their particular committee, the Government Reform Committee, had jurisdiction over any matter at any time. This is the sort of arrogance of Congress. They think that there's nothing that they don't have authority and jurisdiction over. I don't think this is an issue of Congress. I think baseball can determine what its rules ought to be on its own.
But. And I have to say, there's something fishy going on when Congress holds hearings and the president takes time in his State of the Union address to talk about the horrors of steroids, which, so far as I know, haven't killed any kids yet this year, and not very many.
Yes.
And smoking, George, which kills 400,000 people every year, 90% of whom start smoking in childhood. But this is not worthy of congressional hearings or 30 seconds in the State of the
Nation.
The
nation lacks an effective steroid lobby, unlike the tobacco
There's
lobby.
There's something going on other than deep concern for the well-being of children.
Congress's involvement. Dale, maybe? What do you think?
I think it's been helpful. I think, though, what we will find is that the Mitchell report, something that was done internally, will be of most help to this problem. I think it'll be a catalyst for us to make some progress. But I got to say, if the argument is smoking or alcohol or prohibition, it's not what it says up there. It says, should we allow performance-enhancing drugs? I still don't see the correlation. It is a relatively small problem. Totally agree with that. But that's just not the question tonight.
Next question from the audience.
I always thought that competitive sports meant a natural competition, a motivation, an incentive, a desire to want to be the very best. That's what we always teach our kids, no matter what it is that we do, what they want to do in life. And it seems to me that by taking any kind of a performance-enhancing anything, you are taking away the naturalness of wanting to achieve, of wanting to be the best, of wanting to grow. It says, just pump me up, and you have a good business thing here, and put me out.
To whom specifically is your question or statement directed?
It's not really a question. It's just a confusion.
Right.
It's a confusion as to why would drugs even be permissible under any level.
Dr. Foster, a brief response.
Like Carnac, I can answer the question without even knowing the question.
place an envelope to your forehead when doing so in that case.
That's a nice notion about sports, and it's certainly what we ought to promote for our kids, but it hasn't been what sports has been about at an elite level for 7,000 years. If you took the steroids and the growth hormone away, what you would have is literally 1,000 other things that athletes do to enhance their performance, none of them natural. Athletes drink Gatorade from a factory. They take pasta to carboload that's made from a factory. They don't eat potatoes out of the ground to carboload. They put on fancy shoes.
Doctor, I got to interrupt. You're comparing drinking Gatorade to taking anabolic steroids?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying.
Well, then why bring it up?
She said it should be just about nature, just people by their own natural ability. I don't know a single athlete who relies on his or her own natural ability to compete.
Do you think a hypoxic air tent is natural?
Julian Savulescu.
A hypoxic air tent. This is what all U.S. athletes use to boost their red cell count.
Well, my understanding is the reason why they do it is to level the playing field with those that live at high altitude, which this training is readily accessible and permissible. Performance-enhancing drugs are not permissible.
To the audience, yes.
This question is more for those against the motion, maybe particularly Mr. Pound. Setting the legalities aside and the fact that it's against the rules, what difference do you see, if any, between an athlete using performance enhancers to stay in the game and, say, an actress using injections and cosmetic surgery to stay in the movies?
Because what we've agreed in sport...
But setting the rules aside is what I'm saying. I mean, you mention a lot of ethics and you mention a lot of unfair advantages.
Well, you have to have rules in order to have sport. It's unethical because you have agreed to the performance of a particular skill in a particular way, and you've broken that promise. You've cheated on your fellow competitor. That's what's unethical.
So then do you think that if it were to be accepted in sports, that it would then still be unethical? Or if they did allow steroids within sports, would it then be ethical to use them?
It would not be unethical to use them. That's right.
None of us is advocating breaking the rules.
Radley
Balco. The purpose of this debate tonight is to we're debating what those rules ought to be.
But you would agree that what is used outside competitive sports and taken for granted in society really is not a persuasive argument for what should be allowed within competitive sports. You have to make a different argument, and maybe there's a good one, but that isn't it.
I think it's a different argument to say that because we use liposuction or get Botox injections, that that's the same as entering into an agreement to have a competition.
Competition and one guy had to do sit-ups and someone else got liposuction, it wouldn't be a fair competition if anyone cared about that competition.
Absolutely. If you're having a beauty contest and the criteria is natural beauty and someone went out and got breast implants and won the competition,
right?
I would object to that, yes.
All right, it is time.
You're listening to an IQ Squared debate on the proposition we should accept performance-enhancing drugs in competitive sports. We'll now hear excerpts of the closing arguments. Each speaker has 2 minutes, and we'll start with Dick Pound speaking against the motion.
2 minutes.
Thank you. I think that out of the mouths of the other side, you've heard all kinds of reasons why motion should be voted on in our direction. Human nature is not going to change. We've heard from a number of the other opponents talking about there would be ongoing development of these things without care for safety in the cat and mouse game of trying to improve what's out there. So that if you have a doctor prescribing 10 cc's of anabolic steroid and everybody's doing that, then there's no more advantage. So the person who wants the advantage is going to use 20 or 30 or 40. And that will be pursued, as will the sort of research in that area. We had Kelly White, American sprinter, come to the World Anti-Doping Agency after she got caught in the Balco situation. They were giving her the clear THG. She said she was having two enormous menstrual cycles every month, and she had blood pressure that was going right through the roof. And she went to Conte and the others and said, this is happening. He said, oh, well, maybe you should take a little less and drink some more water. They had no idea this stuff was going from a laboratory bench into her system and the system of other athletes. Excellence within sport is what everyone searches for, but it's excellence within agreed rules. And the community speaks. I think the community has a legitimate interest in things that may be a health interest. You know, what happens in the major league influences AAA, AA, single A, college, high school ball. There are pyramids in hockey and basketball. This is a public health problem. And finally, I thought one point made by Dr. Faust was quite telling. He said, more or less, that alcohol, tobacco, steroids, and other dangerous things should be discouraged. And I agree with him entirely.
Now his summation for the motion, Norm Faust.
Every person on this panel agrees that people should play by the rules, and there isn't anyone up here who has defended breaking the rules. The topic that's here for debate tonight is what are the basis of those rules. If there was a rule prohibiting people playing with red hair, we would say, of course, if you have red hair, you can't play. But we wouldn't say that that was a sensible rule. So rules have to have some moral basis or some rational basis. The fact that they simply are there doesn't tell us anything about the basis of them. When we look at what the claims for them are, they seem hypocritical, inconsistent, or based on bad facts. People say they're based on concerns about fair competition, but sports allow grossly unfair competition, Olympic sports, countries against countries. The leagues tolerate unfair competition, so I simply don't believe them when they say they're passionately concerned about fair competition. They say they're concerned about harm. When the president of the National Hockey League says that he's screening for drugs because he's concerned about the safety and health of the athletes, and there's no laughter in the press room, you have to really wonder about what's going on. If you have good arguments, you don't make up things. We have Lyle Alzado being rolled out again tonight. There's not a doctor in America who knows anything about steroids and cancer who thinks Lyle Alzado's tumor had anything to do with steroids. There's not another steroid user ever who had the kind of cancer he had. So if the headline had said, Lyle Alzado, alcohol user, has brain cancer, I guess we'd be talking about alcohol causing brain cancer. So the need to roll out misinformation over and over again suggests there's not much going on the other side. Thank you.
And now speaking against the motion in summation, Dale Murphy.
Well, tonight was the motion is about performance-enhancing drugs. Should they be allowed in sports? I agree with what has been said, that it wasn't about breaking the rules. But I've also heard performance-enhancing drugs tonight compared to your morning latte, to LASIK eye surgery. Maybe we should not allow glasses or contact lens. But that is not the question. If the question was about alcohol abuse, again, I think we would all love to come back and talk about that. But performance-enhancing drugs is the issue. And to me, this, no matter how long it takes, this is a battle worth fighting. What happens if I'm a Major League Baseball player under a doctor's supervision? He tests me, looks at my blood pressure, looks at all the factors and decides, you know, Dale, I don't think you are going to be one of our guinea pigs, as Dr. Faust intimated that we could use Major League Baseball players for if we let this go. Because your blood pressure isn't, you know, I know you're trying to have kids. We don't want to boost your testosterone. If it is generally acceptable to use these things in my sport, but I can't use them or choose not to, I am a totally unfair disadvantage. We can make progress and change the culture.
Radley Balco.
I've been really disturbed over the last month listening to sports talk radio over the...
That's glee. Generally disturbing, Radley.
Yeah. Well, there's been a certain amount of glee and kind of a gotcha mentality to the Marion Jones situation, and I find it troubling that a young woman is being pulled away from her kids and put in jail for 6 months, leaving her kids without a mother for that time over a decision she made about her own health, knowing the risks involved. Now, granted, she broke the rules, but we're in a sort of a feeding frenzy about this at this point, and it's a common phenomenon when drug issues hit the media. Things tend to spin off into a moral panic. And we sort of saw it tonight from our opponents. I mean, the question tonight, the entire time, is what should the rules governing sports be? And a common refrain, particularly from Mr. Pound, was that, well, we shouldn't allow performance-enhancing drugs in sports because the rules say we shouldn't allow them. And I guess what I'm hoping you'll take away from this after listening to our side of this is that maybe every now and then we should sort of take a step back and examine whether the rules themselves are moral and are justified.
And some applause for Radley for actually using up only a minute and 20 seconds. Wow, that was good. All right. Speaking against the motion and summarizing his viewpoint, George Michael.
The mother went to jail because mom cheated. Not with steroids, but it was a check-cashing scheme. And people like me interviewed her a lot before she ever became a star. And I bought and believed everything she said when she said she didn't use. I believed her.
So that's maybe why you might hear a little glee. Doctor, about kids. I don't know if you all have ever heard of Efren Marrero. Efren Marrero, have you ever heard of him, Bob?
The kicker.
No, I was his cousin. Efren Marrero is a
cousin.
Kid wanted to play.
His cousin.
Hey, wanted to play baseball. He was good, not great. But he found out, someone told him, he's 19 years old. He was told, you use steroids and you're going to be good enough. You've got everything you need, just need some more power. So he starts using steroids and he becomes good. This is not make-believe, this is real. Efren Marrero, 19 years old, his parents found out, and like good, responsible parents, dad said, get off that stuff, because he was starting to get a little nutso. Get off that stuff or you can never play another baseball game. He obeyed his parents. He stopped cold turkey. 1 week later, he went into his bedroom and he blew his brains out. But there's no evidence that it was steroids that did it. Time up.
Actually breaking Radley's record by 7 seconds. And the last summation comes from Julian Savulescu. Julian.
Okay, both sides agree that cheating is ruining sport and that this is really the tip of the iceberg. Their position is that we should increase the war on drugs. Our position is that we should adopt a policy of regulated access to performance enhancers that are safe enough and that are consistent with the particular sport spirit. This is not a debate about steroids. If indeed these claims, which are largely anecdotal claims, are true, that steroids have these terrible effects, our side grants that steroids under those circumstances should be banned. However, that doesn't deal with the use of human erythropoietin up to a hematocrit of 50%. It doesn't deal with caffeine, which is already a performance enhancer that's been legalised. It doesn't deal with growth hormone. There are many, many substances. In baseball, you could use modafinil to increase reaction time. You could use new nootropics, such as the piracetam family, to increase reaction time. These substances may well be safe enough. The question is, should performance enhancers be allowed? And there are many performance enhancers our side believes should be allowed. Their position is bound to fail. It has been failing. It will fail because of the prize money and the sophistication of the drug technology. Paradoxically, it harms athletes. Our proposal is enforceable. It frees up the limited resources to focus on drugs that may be affecting children, which we grant should not have access to drugs. It could be focused on drugs which are substantially harmful to athletes and drugs which are against the true spirit of sport. This is not a debate about steroids. It's about whether performance enhancement itself is against the spirit of sport. As we've argued, performance enhancement is not against the spirit of sport. It's been a part of sport through its whole history, and to be human is to be better, or at least to try to be better.
Julian, thank you. And now, very, very briefly, should there be two tiers of sports, Olympics or otherwise, one for those who use, one for those who don't? 10 seconds. Should there be two tiers?
Why not?
Why not, he says, and uses only 1 second. Should there be two tiers, Olympics or otherwise, users, non-users?
Absolutely not, because the bad users will pretend that they're non-users.
All right. And now, before the debate, 18% of you were for the motion that performance-enhancing drugs should be permissible in competitive sports. 63% were against the motion. After the debate, 59% against, 37% for, so they improved their position once the debate was over, but not enough.
We just
not
ran
enough
out of time.
You didn't lose, you just ran out of time. Many an athlete and coach has voiced the same lament. Thanks to all of you.
And that concludes our debate. To hear the full unedited version of this or other debates in the IQ Squared series, or to subscribe to our podcast, visit npr.org/intelligencesquared. The Intelligence Squared U.S. debate series is an initiative of the Rosencrantz Foundation, Chairman Robert Rosencrantz, Executive Producer Dana Wolf. For more information about this series, visit www.iq2us.org. That's IQ, the numeral 2, US.org. The goal of Intelligence Squared U.S. is to raise the level of public discourse in American life and to recognize that on most contentious issues, both sides have intellectually respectable views. This series is produced for radio by WNYC in New York. Producer Rob Christensen, senior producer Ellen Horn. The recording was engineered by Damon Whittemore and Edward Haber. Intelligence Squared US is distributed by NPR, National Public Radio.